Hello, it's Rainstorms Play with Bruce Winwood and me, Mark Crozer. How are you?
Are you asking the people first?
Yeah, I was giving them a space to say great or terrible.
I see, they just fill in the gap, don't they?
And then I was going to go, oh.
Oh, well, we could do all of them, can't we? Go, oh, and oh, and no. Yeah. Go, let it go.
You don't say, let it go.
Just let it go, dude. You might be able to hear in the background. I think it's stopping now a bit. So not so much rain stops play as hail. Big lumps of hail were coming down here on top of the cottage outside Oxford.
Well, seems to have stopped now, unfortunately. Stopped now. Or fortunately.
No, it's actually fortunate because I'm actually looking out from my orifice.
Your orifice, right.
Out of my orifice, the view I've got is of the back garden, and I can see the T-shirts and miscellaneous washed items. Just they got hit by rain, and then now they've just been hit by hail.
Oh, dear.
So what's pissing me off at the moment, actually, is that you can't see this, but Mark sat there all smug in his T-shirt, like, oh, no, New York's really warm now. It's like summer.
Well, it's not actually that warm today, but I'm just in my T-shirt anyway. It's nice. It's all right. It's not cold.
Cold, yeah.
It was really warm at the weekend. It was like 81
degrees.
Oh,
shut up. Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just a statement of fact.
No one wants to know.
Okay.
They really don't want to know. So yesterday, our classic British bank holiday Monday. You probably spoke to your mother. Was she bitching about it, the weather? Did you speak to your mum yesterday?
I did speak to my mum yesterday, yeah.
She bitching said about that, the weather?
Actually, I didn't speak to her, but I texted her, and she said the wind was roaring down the chimney, and she was frightened that the roof was going to get blown off.
I know, I'm not surprised. It was. It was a real roar yesterday, and it was really cold, and everyone had their heating turned back on. I actually went out to the local garage to get some more coal. Because you wouldn't be thinking you need coal fires, would you? Fires. But when you live in a hovel, you do need to keep yourself warm. And I went to five different garages looking for some coal. Because every garage I went to, they said, oh, no, we've only got stuff for the barbecue. Because it's now the summer, right. We've put away the coal. And it's just lovely, you know, bits and pieces for your barbecues. And I said, look outside now. Look outside. It's blowing a hooli and people have got big scarves and big woolly hats on. It's not summer yet, is it? Go and get it out the back. And they said, no, we can't get out the back because of people's barbecues. But they're not buying your barbecues. No one can sit out on that, I was saying. I'm exaggerating a bit.
It is premature.
It was a bit premature. Yes. So England.
Well, there's that older saying, isn't there? Ne'er cast a clout till May is out.
Never heard of that. Did you make that up?
No, I didn't. No, I read that years ago in It's,
what's casting a clout, anyway? What's casting a
well,
clout?
Well, I think it might be a Scottish thing.
Yes.
Ne'er cast a clout till May is out.
Right.
A clout is like a piece of clothing. So yeah. It means basically don't take off any of your clothing until the end of May because you never know what's going to happen in May with the weather.
Particularly in Scotland, you should never take off your jumper in Scotland anyway. Even mid-August, you'd be stupid to take a jumper off in Scotland.
That's true.
Always cold, isn't it? Let's be honest. It's very, very stunning place, but it's always fucking pissing down or cold. Occasionally.
Yar.
I mean, I love it to look at it, but I wouldn't want to live in it.
Oh, you love it.
Oh, he loves it. So anyway, Mark, wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
What is?
I just like saying that. I've no idea.
That I should start making a massive apology. Mm-hmm. Because last week when we recorded the show, I was in a really terrible mood.
Mm.
And a couple of people have asked me if I'm okay, which is nice.
Oh.
And when I say, yes, I am okay, and I do apologize. I was in a real grumpy frame of mind last week.
Yeah,
and I'm feeling a lot better today, so hopefully
You've shaved.
I've shaved and I've had a haircut.
You've had a haircut. Because you did, and you've taken off your... hopefully ironic, but slightly stained My Little Pony hoodie you were wearing. Slightly stained, like you'd just been living in the My Little Pony hoodie for like 2 weeks without washing it. You've been just eating chips off it. So you do look better. I have to say, you did look quite hobo-ish, hobo-esque last week.
Hobo-erotic.
Hobo.
If it isn't, it should be.
I bet there's a site somewhere on the internet that's, if you typed in now, hobo erotic, there's going to be some dodgy as fuck site that people go
if
to.
If there isn't, I'm going to start one because that's bloody brilliant.
Hobo erotic. Yes, well, I'm pleased too, Mark, because I was concerned. Because actually, listeners, I did actually call Mark during the week. I was one of those who called you during
you
the
did,
week
yeah.
between you, podcasts you just to check you were okay. And also to say, also to remind you that you still owe me that money, you motherfucker. That's really why I phoned him.
Checks in the post.
Oh, yeah, always, isn't it? It's always in the post, isn't it? It's never in my hands, is it, Mark? It's always in the post.
Always. Yar.
Anyway, we're happy about that, Mark. And you do seem far more full of the. I think partly because you're getting. If it's 80 degrees at the weekend, you little shit stabber.
Well, it does help, yeah.
Then
shit stabber. What? I beg your pardon.
Not my expression, but I like it. I think it could be used in different another context and be very rude. I mean, it's quite rude as it is. But anyway, you keep it in the show. Don't you take that out of the show, don't you? He does this. Mark takes some of the juicier stuff out of the show sometimes, listeners. I come up with some right juicy, naughty words, and then they're not there. He just goes, oh, no, we can't do that. Oh, no, because
well, you know,
small people listen to this show. And then they don't. Small people never listen to this show. I've looked at the demographics. No young people have ever listened to this show.
Well, you know, got to be careful
no,
you say these days.
Why? Why?
No, you haven't.
Fuck it. Why? Why would we? I tell you what, actually, do you know what we just stumbled into a little bit?
Oh, what have we stumbled
into? I'm going to have a little rant about that. It ties in with what you said. You reminded me of something.
Okay.
With Brainstuff's play. The rant actually is. And I'm not going to be too careful about this. I mean, because actually it'd be quite fun you trying to edit your way around this. So good luck with that. But God. I am going to start to... I'm finishing off 1984, George Orwell's book, 1984. And...
Didn't he finish it himself?
No, I didn't finish reading it because I'm such a slow fucking reader of books, of fiction books anyway. And, you know, there's tons of stuff there that's relevant to today, blah, 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 blah. But the... I have to say, I don't think I've actually ever had a rant. Have I had a rant about the fucking cancel culture and this people being so fucking scared of saying anything these days because they think they're going to get, they think they're going to get cancelled, no platforms and stuff like that. I'm not going to go into specifics about it,
right?
But reading 1984 and then reading constantly in the paper about so and so said this and then they got cancelled and they got. And lots of abuse online because they said this and this and this and this. And it really does, it really pisses me off because freedom of speech is actually disappearing via this. It's been slowly, it's like chipped away. I'm not going to go into on any specifics about it, but it's being chipped away because of fear of saying stuff. And... We obviously don't talk about things when we're recording them, do we? That we think might be a bit worth cancelling. But we do talk about off-air stuff, don't we? And we quite often talk about stuff and then we say, well, we can never say that on air. Oh, no. So it's slightly ridiculous that there's this very... someone's bought a book out recently, this lady, and she's an academic. And she's all I'm saying is subject matter touches on... the old trans debate, and I'm not going to say anything more than that, but from the review I saw in the Sunday Times, it looked like a fascinating book, and she's done a really deep study on this whole thing. And I think even the reviewer was saying, you know, it's amazingly courageous of this woman that she's put her head above the parapet because of the abuse she's going to get, just because she's got, you know, she's an academic, she's, you know, all these opinions that have come through things that she studied to do with the subject and other subjects like that. So my rant is pretty much around those things. Is basically I think we are giving away quite a lot by being scared of saying stuff. People are scared of their career. I think mainly a lot of it is kind of if you're a celebrity, you don't want your career to tank, do you, overnight? Which is what the toxic Twitter toxic Twitter turds I was trying to get alliteration in there can do. They can all swarm on you and just you know rip apart your career. So I can see why people don't to some degree, but it's very worrying. It's a very worrying thing. I'll stop now.
I'll play devil's advocate just for the sake of having another side of the argument. I do know exactly what you're saying, and the thing is, though, I think if you've, and I include myself in this,
yeah.
if you get to a point where you feel like, oh, I can never say that,
yeah.
then maybe chances are it's perhaps something you shouldn't say. Do you know?
No, like if you're that's just not true. Because there's tons of stuff that you would say, and you kind of go, oh, hang on, I'm not quite sure. I mean, how do I couch that? How do I say that? How do I introduce that?
Yeah.
And I think it's just they're very obvious things that you don't. So we've joked before about that we've done the Old Testament Bible study, and we've kind of joked about doing the Quran. Now, that's kind of like an obvious one. You and I aren't going to do that. A, because we don't really know anything about the Quran anyway. But there are certain things whereby people would have back in 20, 30 years ago would have talked about things without the fear. And now there's the fear. I don't mean I just want to be horribly racist and sexist and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's not those things. It's far more nuanced than that. There are certain things we think, well, can I say that? Can I even think that? This goes back to 1984.
I do think, though, that...
Quite thought police-like. It's kind of like, should I be even thinking that? It's very... I don't know. I've just noticed it more and more and more and more. And eventually it just really gets on your tits. And you kind of go...
But I think it's also part of the fact that, you know, we are now having discussions about things, you know, language and attitudes that were acceptable, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago even, that aren't acceptable today. It's kind of natural and normal to go through a phase where it's all a bit unclear and you're not sure what is acceptable and what isn't in terms of language and discussions about things. I feel like it will sort of come back to a middle ground, you know, at some point. That's just my feeling.
Mm.
I was watching, this is kind of slightly going off topic, but not. I was watching a film a couple of days ago with Ruby called Legally Blonde. Mm. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have, yeah.
It's totally stupid. Yeah. It's one of the stupidest films I've ever seen, but it was actually very entertaining.
Reese Witherspoon, wasn't it?
Yeah. This was only made like, I don't know, about 18 years ago. Yeah. It's quite recent. But there was a subject in it that I found myself quite noticing and thinking, God, that's weird. Like if that wouldn't get made now. So it was basically, I don't know if you remember, there's like a, she is like this sort of ditzy intern at a law firm. And anyway, the lawyer comes on to her and he kind of puts his hand on her leg and he sort of makes a pass and then she walks out. And then it never gets mentioned again other than, oh, that was, he's a dickhead or something. Mm. And I just thought, that's such a different attitude because now that wouldn't just be like something that you kind of like laugh off.
No.
You know what I mean? It would be sexual harassment.
Yeah.
I'm suing you for that. And rightly so, I would think, you know, because that is totally inappropriate. But I'm just getting at like that was very recent times and that was in a film and there was no, it was kind of, you know, oh, he's a sleazebag.
Yeah.
But there weren't any repercussions for him.
Yeah.
So I think it is important that we are having conversations about things.
See,
like
I'm not
that
really thinking about those. To me, those things are kind of obvious. I'm not pushing you down for bringing that one up.
Yeah.
But it's kind of obvious. It's kind of like, and that's a positive thing that is the case, and that's good. It's a bit more nuanced than that. It's the sort of things
we have to give an example then, because it's hard to.
Dear.
Well, that's.
I'm going to give a sideways example of this.
Okay.
I mean, just in terms of the sort of culture that we could be regretting in years to come. So you've heard of these trigger warnings.
Yes.
Okay. So particularly universities or something that there's before a lecture, then there will be a trigger warning that something might be said that might upset people. And from where I come from where you come, it's kind of weird, isn't it? It's kind of strange because at what point does that stop the trigger? At what point, where's the, where do, at the moment, you could say any, you can imagine that anything is going to potentially upset somebody. So, today I'm going to read from Jane Eyre. Okay, the lecture is about Jane Eyre, everybody. And then I better do a trigger warning here because there will be, the suggestion of there's a woman who's in the attic and everything, and she's a bit mad. But is she mad? She's probably just mentally whatever. I've said Jane Eyre, and now I can't remember the story enough to be able to.
No, that's good. I think that's a good example.
But it would be about anything. But you could anything. Really, you could say, and therefore you have to say this might upset you, or the portrayal of this might upset you, and you might feel oppressed by this. And those things, I mean, it doesn't prepare you for life in any shape or form, having trigger warnings. You should sort of say, basically, life is fucking hard, and there's a horrible shit that's going to happen, and better for you to sort of get that now, rather than get older and suddenly go, oh my goodness, I didn't know that even existed. It's sort of, you build up some resilience, build up a little bit of thick skin on this one, because it ain't no party. Lots of life is just fucking horrendous.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we're helping. And then you have this whole fear thing, it's all about fear. It's about, I'm scared that if I hear about that or read about that, I'll be upset. It's kind of like, well, again, there's no parallels of that to when we were that age in particular. There's no parallels where people said, look, we're going to talk about the Holocaust. and it's horrible. And we're going to show you some footage of they had diggers. You must have seen the footage, horrendous footage of diggers kind of pushing all the bodies that, they found into big pile and stuff like that. Military diggers and everything else like that, and it's just horrific to watch. But if you don't see it, then you kind of go, you have to understand how awful it was. And there we are, we've got some footage and we talk about it. But if the whole trigger warning thing, you kind of go, well, some bad stuff happened, but we can't show it to you because you might get really upset. And it's like,
but the warnings is just to sort of let you know what's coming. It's not that they're not, I don't think.
But it's the mentality. Like,
an educational setting.
But it's the mentality behind it, isn't it? It's just say something's going to be, it's kind of for those. I mean, that's a very obvious example, that if you're going to show footage from the Holocaust, you probably would say, some people might find this upsetting. Of course they would. It is upsetting. I mean, that's a very obvious example.
I should say more than some people might. I mean, surely everybody's going to find that upsetting.
Yes, everyone's going to find it upsetting. But I think it's more that basically, at what point you get, it's this whole thing about offence, isn't it? It's being offended. It's like somebody is going to be offended by anything you say or think. Somebody somewhere on this planet is going to think everything we talk about is offensive somehow. Just what I mean? They will find offense.
Yeah.
And that again is very, it's just, to me it seems like there's part of it, there's the obvious stuff which we know is really good that's happened in terms of, like, sleazy man puts hands on knee, and these days, get their asses sued, might end up in jail, blah blah blah. We know that's good, that has changed. But there's just lots of other things which are coming in with this, which I think is just a little bit more concerning. And definitely freedom of speech. What's funny, what's not funny. What's been happening, what happens in France, people get beheaded for basically, showing some cartoons of things that, if you believed in what they believe in, there would be people who would find offence. But it's all of it. Yeah. Quite often it's context. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I like to think, at least maybe it's just me being naive, that common sense will prevail at some point, and people will say, well, yes, okay, that, like you say, right now we're in this kind of stage where it's sort of like everything is being thrown into that category of being, causing offence from very extreme things, which obviously do, to things maybe which don't. But I think it's just kind of part of that process of change, that sometimes it goes to the other extreme before it comes back to a more of a middle ground. That's just what I hope will be the case.
Yeah. It's like, so I mean, I will give you a really good example. I think it's an important example. I think this is, so did you hear about that? So go back to the cartoons of Mohammed. But, you know, I was mentioning about that with Charlie Hebdo and everything in France. And then what's happened since, when that French teacher showed those cartoons again within context, it was within context of doing a lesson about, you know, satire and about freedom of speech. And then he got his head got decapitated. So, but there was a, you know, in England, there was a teacher that showed the cartoons. And you hear about this?
I don't know.
And there was, he basically had to, he got suspended straight away. And then he's had to move, go into hiding, because the local community basically were outside the school gates demanding. Virtually, he was lynched. I mean, he wasn't lynched, but he was kind of like, you know. And again, they're doing it in May. We'll find out the exact context of this teacher showing these images. Okay.
Right.
But he may have been a bit naive in which he showed that. I don't know. Or it could have been purely contextual and said, look, this is, you know, this is satire. People believe that this is, they shouldn't do this. This is, you shouldn't portray Allah. And these people have done this, but they also have their own points of view on this sort of thing. And there's a long sort of history of satire and blah, blah, and the importance of, you know, satire and comedy and everything else like that. So the way in which that teacher, I imagine, unless that person had a complete and absolute kind of moment of utter madness, I imagine it was within the context of teaching something. And then word gets out, and now that teacher is he's suspended and he's almost in hiding. And you kind of go, that is really scary, because there's a knee-jerk reaction from the school saying, you're suspended. You know, but and you go, you know, it's just.
Yeah, you're right. The context of the situation is key
to
all of that stuff.
Mm.
I think the thing that is scary the most is the extreme reaction to things. It's like, because we have to also, part of being human is that we make mistakes frequently and we say the wrong things frequently.
Yeah.
And people should be, there has to be different degrees. That's what I'm saying. I think that's what, at the moment, it's like everything is sort of judged in the same way.
Yeah.
And the response to it is the same, whether you're Harvey Weinstein or like that guy who just made an error of judgment maybe, or didn't, or maybe what he did was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, because you don't know the context.
No.
That's the dangerous thing. It's almost like we've got to a point where people aren't allowed to make mistakes.
Yes.
You know, and there is a difference between making a mistake, an error of judgment, and a willful intent to cause harm to somebody physically or mentally or emotionally. That's the thing. And I think at the moment, not seeing the difference, just being judged all in the same way.
Yes, and there is, it's interesting you use the word judge, because the word judge is a lot, isn't it? It's people judging people. And again, that's going back to what you were saying about, we all fuck up, we're all fucking stupid, and we're all very foolish, all of us. We all do absolutely stupid, mad, foolish, dumbass things. But it's the people who then judge, and you get judged for things. So, and as soon as you judge somebody, I mean, we're going back to, you know, this is kind of a Jesus thing, isn't it?
Right.
You know, don't judge lest ye want to be judged. Is that what he says? The old...
Something like that.
You know, the mote in the eye and everything. And I can't remember exactly. He said it better than I did. Judgment is a ghastly thing. And there's a lot of judgment, isn't there? There's a lot of people. I always think it's quite funny, that whole thing with cars, when people are driving cars, and everyone gets road rage is classic, isn't it? Because it's the idea that a person is like, I can't believe that person did that thing in the other car, and yet they no doubt will have done something similar. But at that moment, it's like, that person's a complete wanker, and I'm not. I am the best driver in the world. I never fuck up. I never make mistakes. And actually, you do. But self-righteousness. Oh, I hate self-righteousness, don't you?
Yeah, I find myself actually pretty much every day having a moment like that, because around here people drive not very well.
Yeah.
And every single time I'm trying to cross a road, somebody runs the red light and then I'm going, you fucking... And then as I'm doing it, I'm thinking, well, come on, I mean, I've walked across the road at a red light myself loads of times. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm a pedestrian. I'm not going to run into someone and kill them,
no,
like a car would. But still, I think maybe at times like this, where the world is so, everything is so precarious, and we are so out of control, we're not able to control our lives very much, things like that happen more often.
Mm. Okay, there we go. So ranty, ranty, danty, danty, danty. So Mark, so what have you been up to?
I feel like I haven't been up to very much, and yet I also feel like I've been through quite a week of thinking and processing stuff, man. Because last time I spoke to you, I was telling you how I was in this turmoil of trying to figure out what to do about my apartment, because lease is coming up, and after all
is
my
she?
Thinking, I decided...
Is she?
Hey?
When's she, what? When's she coming up?
What are you talking about?
Lisa.
My lease is coming up for renewal.
You said my lease is coming up.
I don't.
Is she coming up? Was she coming up the stairs right there in this moment? Is she? Yeah. Who's Lisa? She shouldn't be in your house. It's COVID.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Carry on. Sorry. Your lease is coming up.
No, we're... I'll get on to that in a minute. We're, I decided I'm just going to stay in my apartment.
Oh, you are? And, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I can't really afford it.
And you like it, don't you?
I love it.
There you go.
It's close to my daughter.
There we go.
I need, and it's the one sort of stable thing I have at the moment. Mm. So, anyway, you just said something. No, we're allowed to. The rules have changed over here much more than they have. Like now, if you're vaccinated, right, you can go outside without a mask on. You can be in a small group without a mask on, and you can be. I think you can even be inside with other, if you're with other people who are vaccinated, you don't need to wear a mask.
Oh, wow.
So I had my hair cut yesterday morning, and we both had been vaccinated, so we didn't have to wear our masks, which was nice. It was kind of weird because like I said to her, like, you are one of the few people whose face I've actually seen in the last almost a year, because everywhere you go, everyone's wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I remember what you look like. So it was quite good.
Yeah. Gosh, that is.
Yeah, it seems a bit more lax over here than it is in the UK.
Well, the UK, it's we're
I know things are opening up there.
Things are. We seem to be, things are opening up quicker than they imagined, which is, in fact, there hadn't been any COVID deaths in Oxford for like 2 months now.
Really?
Yeah, in the Oxford area.
That's good.
I think there's about four or five regions of the country which has just had, it's like, it's just, COVID's packed up his bags and fucked off. I mean, obviously it hasn't, but it feels like it. But slightly concerning about people going off on holiday and bringing it back with them.
Well, that's the thing, isn't
it? We want our holidays. And then coming back.
We do have to get to this point of thinking, I think I'm sure I said this last time, of this on a global scale. It's not about individual countries doing well.
Yeah.
Unless that country is just going to isolate completely, not let anyone in, not do any trade with other nations, which is impossible, you know. I mean, look at India right now. It's awful. It's like 20 million cases, you know, and it's, we just got to look at this on a global and treat it globally, not maybe it'll be, well, who knows. I don't know if human beings can really come together in that sense, but we need to.
Yes, we do. So humans, if you're listening out there, come together. Is there a song called Come Together? Is there a Beatles song
called Come
Together? There's
several songs called Come Together. There's a Beatles song called Come Together. There's a Primal Scream song called Come Together. And there's a spiritualized song called Come Together. I'm sure there are others as well. Should we just play lots of songs called Come Together?
Good knowledge, man, mate. Good knowledge, man.
Well, I'm a DJ, you know.
You are a DJ on Fridays, aren't you? DJs on Fridays. Profession. Podcasters on Mondays. Tuesday, wherever we are now. Yeah, so there we go. There's COVID. It's looking positive, more positive in certain areas. I should say India, that's not so much. Yeah, good.
Andrew Love. If you want some graphic design, go to Andrew Love. Some graphic design, go to Andrew Love. Andrew Love. Andrew Love.
Let's crack on. I've got a couple. We've got Hester's Tester, and we do have an on the hook with Mr. Simon Hook. Right. So I don't know if you want to tackle one of those.
Let's tackle something.
Let's tackle one.
That was a very serious 30 minutes of chat there.
That's right. No one's going to really focus on it, are they? No one's going to listen.
No one's going to listen.
That's right. I don't listen to what I'm saying when I'm saying it, so I don't expect anyone else to. We've got no corporate investors. Goof about like a couple of jesters. Try to stop us, you try to arrest us, but before you do, it's time for Hester's Tester. This is very funny from Hester here.
Right.
It comes from the fact that... Hang on. She says this, I was once locked up in a museum in Manchester and had to spend the night there.
Really? Oh, my God.
I know. A museum in Manchester. Fascinating.
Does she say what museum it was?
No, she doesn't. She says it was with an ex-boyfriend. We need to hear more about that story and find out what
I'd love to hear more about that.
A night in the museum in Manchester with Hester.
Sounds like a movie.
Sounds like, doesn't it? So the question comes out from that, and that is there a town where you experienced something extraordinary? And I thought you would have more than one tale to tell here. So off you go, Mark. Is there a town where you experienced something extraordinary?
Well, I'm just getting concerned now that I might be repeating myself.
Doesn't matter. No one remembers what we say a week later anyway. I'm thinking touring days. Is that right? When you were touring? Germany?
All right. I'm sure I've talked about it before in here.
Doesn't matter. Long time ago. Probably Earcorn days.
Right. Okay.
Go on.
So yeah, 2005.
Yeah.
when I was on tour with that band, Ox, from Vancouver. Not from Vancouver, from Ontario. Is that where you want? Is this a story that you're alluding to?
Yeah.
And I think so. I was driving, right? We were on tour in my little car. It was a car, somebody from the phone room who used to, well, a friend of mine called Aldi, he gave me a car, an Audi, funnily enough. Aldi
gave you a car, an Audi?
Yeah, he just gave me a car. He said, people keep giving me cars and I don't need it. That's funny in itself, isn't it?
Wow. But his name was Aldi.
His name was Aldi, A-L-D-I-E.
And he gave you an Aldi?
And he gave me an Audi. Yeah.
You can't make this shit up, can you?
No.
Carry on.
So we went on tour in this car.
Yeah.
And it was all fine until we were driving from Maastricht. Me and Ryan, the guitar player, I decided to go on a... We had a week off. And we went on a little camping excursion from... the intention was to drive from Maastricht to Prague. And about 3 hours outside of Maastricht, the car suddenly started spouting all this white, thick white smoke. And I managed to pull over. And then we were standing looking at the car, trying to figure out what's going on here. Because the engine was pretty much on fire. And then this just happy coincidence, this... German equivalent of the RAC just kind of pulled up. He must have seen the smoke as he was driving along, pulled it behind us and came and had a look. And he's like, oh, it's kaputt. And like, what do you mean? He didn't seem to speak any English. What do you mean kaputt? Like, finished. It's kaputt. Like, oh. Oh, no. So then we had to get it towed to this garage. And got to the garage and it was closed because it was a Sunday, and then I had to leave the car there overnight and come back the next day when the garage was open. So me and Ryan then had to find somewhere to sleep, and we walked off in the direction of a town that was about 3 miles away, and got to this tiny town. I can't remember what it was called. It's really bugging me. I've been for years trying to remember the name of that town. And it was like sort of a commuter town that was, it was dead, completely just deserted. There was nobody around at all. Everything was closed. And then in the distance, I saw, oh, there's a group of people standing, talking. And then it was just, you know, it was dark at this point. And then as I got close to them, I realized that there were statues.
were you doing the thing going, hey, excuse me, I wonder if you could help.
Hello? Just like, oh, there's people over there. Let's go and talk to them. And then it's like, oh.
So it's a deserted town. And the only people, things that look like people around were the statues.
Yeah. It's so like anyway, we still, I can't remember when we were like walking. Hey?
It's like a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, we were walking around. I was convinced we were going to end up murdered. Yeah. We were like walking around for, seemed like hours and hours trying to find somewhere that was open. And there was just, I think there was a restaurant that there were a couple of people eating at. And then we went and asked in there. And they said, oh, you go and try up here. So we found this place and it was open. She looked really surprised to see people coming in. But we stayed there overnight. And then the next day it was really sunny. We woke up and thought, oh, it's brilliant. Everything will be fine. The car will get fixed. Let's walk back down to the garage. And as we were walking down the hill, like Ryan, it was really warm. Ryan had taken his shirt off. He was just walking along sort of bare-chested. And he's got this kind of couple of weeks growth on his face of, you know, scruffy. And he looks a bit like a terrorist at the best of times. Mm. And he was ahead of me. And then as we were approaching the forecourt of this garage, there was a man and a woman there. And they kind of like waved at us. I was like, oh, brilliant. And then as we got close, there's like, what are you doing here? It's like explained, like, oh, that's my car there. It broke down. We need to, we're here to get it fixed. And they're like, okay, empty your car. Like, what? Empty your car. We need to look in there. Like, okay. So we entered. I said, well, what are you looking for? And he said, we're looking for if you have any guns or drugs. Like, oh, no, I don't have anything like that. Well, take it all out.
Yeah.
Everything, like, took everything out of the car. Yeah. Even, like, the carpets, they had to made us take out the little, you know, carpets and the footwell and everything. And then, you know, they didn't find anything, obviously, apart from, well, at one point they pulled out this little tin that had some pills in it. I was like, oh, shit, what the hell's that? And then Ryan's like, no, those are aspirin. Aspirin. It's like, why do you keep aspirin in a tin without any packaging? And anyway, they seemed satisfied because obviously they were aspirin. And they're like, okay, put everything back in the car again. So we're like, put everything back. Whatever, like, we had tons of stuff.
Yeah.
Amplifiers, like two amplifiers, three guitars, loads and loads of luggage. Stuff belonging to the other guy in the band who had gone off to Spain for the week.
Hmm.
So I just load it all back in and then waited around. And then, like, the mechanic turned up. I can't remember now exactly if the garage was closed. But anyway, somebody came, like, with a tow truck, and he looked at the car and he's like, it's kaput again. Like, oh. And he just basically said, you know, it's finished, car, the engine's finished. So then we had to empty the car out again of all the stuff. Like, okay, empty it out, get it all out again. And then we had been planning on going camping in Prague. Like I said, for some reason I brought like a box of food from the UK with me. I don't know why. It seemed like a good idea. I had all these like tins of baked beans. I'm sure I've told this story before. I feel like I'm repeating myself.
Well, it's a good story. I don't give a shit. I like it.
And I just had all this food, and I just, like, once the car was empty, I just kind of went took this box to the driver of the truck. Yeah. Like, do you want these tins of beans?
What's a gift?
Yeah, because I didn't have anything. I mean, it was just one extra thing to carry at that point. We weren't going to make it to Prague. And he just looked completely bemused, like, okay, I'll take your beans.
Thanks for that.
And then I just watched as the car was taken off on the back of this truck. Aww. That's happened to me on so many occasions where I've watched my car being towed off after some, like, crazy...
And yet,
adventure.
And yet, there isn't a song.
How do you write a song about that?
There needs to be a song about you losing your car, your car being towed away. Because it's like a metaphor, isn't it? It's also, it happened a few times, but it's like a metaphor in life, isn't it? It's something that transports us being towed away.
Yeah.
And that's what's watching something that's important to us being towed away.
I should tell you this other one, because I don't think I have talked about it. I definitely haven't talked about this one, at least in the show, which was the year after that, when I had this red post office van. I don't know if you remember when I bought that from a guy in Sheffield. With purely with the intention of using it to drive bands around. It's like brilliant. And I really liked it. Anyway, I'd had it for about 6 weeks. And this band came over from another band from Canada, from Toronto, and met them at the airport, picked them up in the van. We drove off and they were tired, so we ended up staying in some like travel lodge for the day, and then got to Oxford. Everybody, this was one of the times when I had like seven people sleeping in my in that room in Kirlington.
The room at Kirlington, yeah.
And then the next day we set off. They were playing a show in Bristol. It was the first gig of the tour, and we had to stop off in Oxford at my mum's house to collect some amplifiers and stuff that I had stored there. And we got as far as Cowley Road, just outside the Zodiac, as it was then.
Yeah.
And then the van just started making these strange noises, and then it just died. Managed to kind of, I think, just got around the corner on one of those side streets before it died, and like, wow, this is a familiar. this feels very familiar. And then they said, like, this is the exact same spot we broke down last time we were here. And I thought, oh, that's not a good sign, is it? I've got some kind of cursed band. So he was sitting there, and then got another mechanic out, and he's like, your big end's gone.
He said, it is kaputt.
He said, he had a German accent.
You must have met my brother Hans.
No, he's like, your big end's gone. I was like, what does that mean? What does that mean? He's like, your engine, you need a new engine.
Not good.
And I was like, oh no. So we got towed back to my mum's.
Yeah.
And had to unload everything outside my mum's house in very suburban, sort of middle class New Marston. And these guys, like, they look like the Groovy Ghoulies, right? Really, like, some of them really long hair, really gothy. Like, one guy was wearing a fur cap with a feather in it and a big, big sort of fur coat. And I could just see all the curtains twitching across the road. It's like, oh, some strange people unloading some gear outside. So then I had to get this. Tried to find another van to get to this first gig of the tour.
Yeah.
I contacted this guy, Tarrant, who runs this thing called Vans for Bands, and he didn't have anything available, but he had this one van. He's like, let me see what I can get hold of. And then he's like, okay, I've got something, but, you know, it's a bit rough. So, then, you know, we were in the house eating custard creams, and my mum made everybody a cup of tea. It was very nice. And then I heard this kind of noise. And looked out the window and I saw this van coming out the street. And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is this? And it was like this big, old, rusty Ford Transit van that said Oxford Granites and Memorials on the side. And he pulled up and I'm like, oh my God. And he's like, yeah, it's a bit rough, but it's all I could find. And he opened the door and I looked in and there was just like seats in the back, but they weren't kind of like fixed down. There was like a deck chair. And like some seats out of like another van or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And he's like, okay, let me explain what we've got to do here, right? Because there's a problem with the ignition. Okay, you've got to get the engine started. What you need to do is you've got to turn the key. Someone's got to open up the bonnet, and you need to touch the spark plug with a screwdriver. And he said, whatever you do, make sure it's not in gear or it'll break your legs. Because it'll like lurch forward. I thought, oh my God. Okay, brilliant. So so we got loaded this van up. And I mean, it was like, I've never driven anything that was so slow in my life. You know, it was just like 0 to 60 in about half an hour. And I'm usually quite a good driver. But for some reason, that particular van, because I wasn't used to it, I kept stalling.
I was constantly stalling that van.
Yeah. And then, of course, every time I stalled it, someone had to get out, open up the bonnet, stick the screwdriver on the spark plug. And okay, here we go. Yeah. It's like, you know, clear. putting the paddles on a patient. So, and then we got to Bristol.
Yeah.
Amazing that we got there with, like, I don't know, an hour to spare, found the venue, parked up, unloaded. Got everything out, set up. They started playing. It sounded really good. And then, they did the show. 1 minute or so into the first song, everything in the venue was plunged into darkness. Like there was a power cut.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, way! And all, you know, it was like the drummer carried on playing for a few bars without the band. Like, oh shit!
Yeah.
So anyway, I was like, oh, this is a disaster. And then they managed to get, you know, there was like the sound engineer came out with his torch and was looking around and all the wiring, and then he managed to get it working again after about 20 minutes. I was like, hey, a big cheer. Because quite a crowd there, actually. And they started playing again. And then about a minute or so into the song, the same thing happened again. The whole place just plunged into darkness. And the drummer's like, oh, shit. And that was it. That was the end of the show. So it's like we'd gone through all this massive rigmarole of getting this van, getting to Bristol for them to play for about 2 minutes. The thing that was, I mean, they really they did really endear themselves to me, because they were really, they could have been like pissed off, but they just thought the whole thing was hilariously funny. They took it all in good stride. So I thought, oh, this is going to be fun working with them. And then the rest of the week, after that, I got another van. I managed to get hold of another van the day after that. So the third van, and it all went relatively smoothly
When the power went down the venue, it wasn't one of your lot that jumped up with his little screwdriver and said, hang on a minute, this normally works.
But then afterwards, just reminded me that we did. I took a wrong turn, and Bristol is quite hilly in places.
Oh, yeah.
So I took a wrong turn. We ended up going up this really, really steep, narrow street, and then got to the top of it, and it just ended. I didn't notice that it was. So then I had to try to do like a 3-point turn in this really tiny space with this massive van, and of course I kept stalling it. So it was just like constant, go forward a couple of feet and then stall. Somebody get out, spark it up. Go forward a couple of feet, stall it. It was just, I was drenched in sweat by the time we actually were driving off. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
It was, anyway. So yeah, that was something extraordinary that happened in Oxford and Bristol and Bristol. Outside Berlin.
And Germany.
Maastricht.
Extraordinary. Ooh, good answers, my rather, friend. Good stories.
Yeah.
One more here. So now that's Hester. Thank you very much for your question. Thank you very much for this. And then we've got Mark. No, we don't. You're Mark, aren't you? No. We've got Simon, of course, on the hook.
On the hook with Simon Hook. His questions we do slay. Unrinsed up slay.
He's really going for the brief ones now, which is really good, because this is a good punchy,
is it?
Brief question. Yeah, you'll like it. I liked it a lot. Here we go. The question is this. In fact, it's only got four words in it, Mark. It's a question with four words and just one little question mark at the end. Okay, here we go. Twins, cool or creepy? I shall repeat that. Twins. No. Cool or creepy?
I've never thought about twins being either cool or creepy before.
Yeah, but we are now.
No, I know. So just give me a moment to think about it.
Have you ever known any twins?
I have known twins.
Look the same.
Not identical. I don't know any identical twins, but identical I have known twins. A few non-identical twins.
How does that work, non-identical? It's just, that doesn't mean anything, does it? They're not twins if they don't look the same.
Of course they are.
What, they come at the same time?
Yeah,
but they're different.
They were conceived at the same time.
They're still a twin if you come out at the same time.
Yeah. They're born on the same day.
Is that okay?
From the same mother.
Okay, I just don't think that really counts. Identical twins. Really. I'm not interested in unidentical. I think twins should only be identical. To be honest. I probably offended somebody now, and I came back to what I was saying at the beginning of the show.
I'd just like to say.
I've offended some non-identical twins. Twinist. Typical Winwood. Twinist as usual. So I'm trying to think. I've never known any twins. But I think I'd be kind of fascinated. So he says, the question is cool or creepy. I think I'd be quite fascinated by identical twins. Actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I did know identical twins. There were identical twins that I was at school with. I completely forgotten.
Oh, there you go.
And I think even though they're identical, because if you're around people a lot, like at school, like for years, you do start to be able to recognize which one's which because of certain name badges. Their name's different. The name was the same. You'd be fucked if they were both called Dave. Dave and Dave, the identical twins. There were actually, so there was those two girls, Cleo and Emma, and then my friend Alex and Rory, who were twins but not identical.
But one identical.
So and then there were other identical. In fact, there was another set of identical twins in the same year as me. Paul and someone else, I can't remember their name. So, in fact, there was also, I just remembered that there were three sets of identical twins in my year. Is that unusual? That seems like it probably is.
This is like quite
unusual.
A lot.
Sets of identical twins and one set of non-identical twins. And for all I know, there might have been others who...
Hang on a minute. Is there a chance you went to the school of identical twins by mistake?
Oh, that explains
a lot. You were the only one there that wasn't.
I wondered why I never made any friends.
No, that's right.
Because the way they always called me oddball.
It felt a bit lonely as well, didn't it?
Yeah, good point.
I suppose the creepy bit comes in because quite often identical twins are used in movies, aren't they? It's like the identical twins is kind of... Well, like the twins in
Harry
The Shining.
Potter. Oh, The Shining.
Right. It's twins, wasn't it? Was it twins? Yeah. It was the little girl on the bicycle. Was she a twin? Was she part of a twin? I've forgotten now.
No, the kid on the bicycle was a boy.
There were two twin.
There were twin girls, yeah.
There were twin, So it's used as a kind of like horror trope type thing, isn't it? The creepy bit, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose I never thought of those twins that I actually knew as being creepy.
No.
Or cool. I suppose it's kind of cool, isn't it? Because
it's cool.
You can play pranks.
Yeah.
Can't you quite nicely when you're a teenager?
I would all the time.
I wonder how many times people have done that with their twin where they've like gone on a date and then said, okay, you go next time.
Yeah.
And let me know what you think.
Yes. See, well, if there are any identical twins out there, then do contact us via the magic portal, which you'll find at the bottom of your garden. It's that portal looking thing. If you go through the portal, then you can then with the, oh, it doesn't matter.
And if you've ever had sex with identical twins, then do get in touch too, because I'm quite curious about that.
We were skirting around that. We were being very politically correct there, weren't we? Because we all wanted to talk about sex
and just go straight for it.
Girls who are identical twins. Yes, if you had sex with identical twins, if you've had a three, that's what you want to say. Have you had a threesome? Isn't it?
That's what about identical
ultimately
triplets?
Ultimately, that's where you were wanting to go, Mark, wasn't it?
Oh, that reminds me. That's reminded me.
That reminds you about threesomes? Oh, Mark, no. Go on. What does it remind
there
you
was
about?
This,
how exciting.
I don't know if you saw this, but about 3 years ago, there was a really excellent documentary.
Yeah.
I think it was called Three Identical Brothers or something like that.
Yeah.
So
triplets.
I went to see this film. And starts off interviewing this guy, and he's talking about his family, and then he discovers through some chance encounter that he has a twin, an identical twin brother.
Yeah.
And they meet up and they discuss, you know, their family background, and they've both come from like quite a poor family, the others from
is this real? I missed the beginning.
This is real. This is a documentary. Documentary.
Sorry, come on.
So that one of them has come from this, was placed with a wealthy family, and the other was with a poor family, and they're quite curious about that, you know, how, because they were adopted, right?
Yes.
And then as they're doing research, they discover they have a third brother, a triplet, identical triplet, who was placed with another family. And as they're getting to know each other, two of them, they start to uncover this conspiracy, basically, that they were split up at birth and then placed in three families from very different backgrounds and different tiers.
As
a social experiment.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Who did that?
It was in the 1950s or in the 1960s. No. I can't remember. And
that's hard to believe,
it starts off as being this quite sort of you know, you feel quite elated that they've met up, but then as you start to discover this story that it's like a social experiment.
Who did that?
I don't remember now because it was a while ago that I saw it, but it ends up, you know, being quite sad because one of the brothers has had all kinds of mental problems. He ends up committing suicide. And I'll look it up. It's really worth watching because, I mean, it's a fascinating, terrible story, you know.
Yes, but the awful bit about that, because you want to, you know, it's an awful thing that they did that without their knowledge. But also fascinating to know actually what were the results, because the whole nature-nurture thing, it's not an experiment that I kind of advocate anyone should do.
No.
The nature versus nature-nurture thing is quite interesting in that sense.
Yes, unfortunately, I don't remember what the outcome was. Except that, you know, obviously, like these people's lives had been when they found this out.
Yeah.
And I think one of them had suspected that something, because I can't remember where it was from. I'll have to look it up and talk about it another time. But
I can't believe there's somebody would actually do that. Mind you, I go all big and shocked and surprised about that. But then you just think about we talk about this, what happened on Christmas Island with the H-bomb, A-bomb, atomic bomb testing with the British troops on Christmas Island. You know that story, do you?
I don't know.
Something shocking. Well, it's like, is it the late 50s? Well, anyway, or during the 50s when the UK was, we were trying to play catch up with the Americans and develop our own hydrogen bomb. Or atomic. I always get confused. It's basically a nuke. And all these soldiers went off to the Christmas Islands, which is in the middle of the Pacific, and they weren't told why they were there. And there were a lot of them, hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of them, because it's top secret. And then basically they started to... The plane flew out into the ocean, and they were told to turn around. So they all turned around on the beach, and then an atomic bomb was dropped. Far out at sea, so it wasn't going to get them. But of course, it did get them because of the radiation. But they just asked them to. I think what happened, the officers drove off. Classic. Right. The officers, I think, fucked off into a bunker, but the soldiers just turned around. So their back was towards the radiation. Anyway, lots of people from lots of squaddies from that time have died of cancer early. You know, so I get shocked by the story you told me, but actually that just happened and that was, you know.
Right.
They knew. Wasn't like it was a big surprise that maybe there might be. They knew about radiation, but obviously because they knew what happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, so I get sort of, you know, it is quite incredible. Some very sad stories come out of that. Anyway, but that's interesting. Can I just say, just before we end, actually, because we're talking about twins and the same names, a bit of a theme there. Something I read over the weekend. Again, this is fascinating. True story. There's this guy in America, I've forgotten his name, who basically. A wizard, not an actual wizard, but he's a wizard chemist biologist, and he basically, off his own back, back in the early 2000s, he in his own little lab, when they discovered SARS and they didn't know what SARS was, he basically got the old code and everything and worked it out really quickly compared to all the governmental labs. And so he was contacted by the American government saying, well, that's amazing, how did you do that? And he said, well, I came up with this little device here, this little chip, and I use this chip to basically you put the virus on there, and by doing that, by clever things to do with the chip, it knows what the genomic code is on it, you know, and that's how I worked out what this thing was before you guys did, because I'd already designed this thing in my shed out the back. So basically he got invited by these, this is a fascinating bit. He was invited by this secret military and scientific thing in America that meets. He was invited to it. So he was taken there. I think it was the old blindfold thing. But anyway, he was taken to this meeting. And it was called the Jason meet. He was taken to meet the Jasons, and he thought it was weird. What are the Jasons? So he turned out, and he said he had 10 minutes because there were lots of people like him who have done incredible things, and they had 10 minutes to tell this auditorium full of the Jasons about his thing, literally 10 minutes. And when he was there speaking for 10 minutes about what he'd done, he just saw in the front row that all these different, you know, admirals and generals and scientists, they all had little name tabs and they all said Jason.
Right. That's strange.
Right. Yeah, basically. So he had 10 minutes to tell them and then he was moved on and they said, well, that's very exciting and everything else like that. The Jasons. So I presume the Jason still carries on where you get all these people, it's all anonymous and stuff, yeah. and they all meet in some subterranean kind of auditorium. Maybe we'll get invited to the Jasons, you and I, and we'll have 10 minutes to tell them how to run the world. What would you say, before we go, Mark, that's our question I put to you. What would you say? You've got 10 minutes. You've got gathered before you. You've got these top military brass, top scientists, maybe top politicians. You've got 10 minutes to say something worthwhile that you think might help with the world. Go. Don't do 10 minutes of it. We haven't got time, but just tell me the subject you'd do.
I'll go back to what I've said before. I'd say, let the women take over for a bit.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, genuinely.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Just see, let's see what happens. And you say that probably about 20 seconds. Okay, so you said that. So you got another 9.5 minutes to go. What else are you going to say?
Do you want to hear some jokes?
Do the jokes? Yeah.
I told you about my time when my car broke down in Germany. I'll tell that. That takes about 9 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, or you could fuck it up by doing a really bad mother-in-law joke after saying, let the women rule the world, and then do a really bad mother-in-law joke and completely undermine yourself.
I've got to take a Les Dawson video with me.
Ah, dear. There we go. I think we're done, aren't we? You done?
I'm spent.
Me too. It's quite tiring, this, isn't it? Talking nonsense.
I actually had a few things prepared, but I'll save them for another time because they're not time sensitive.
Nah, good.
They'll carry over to next week.
Next week. Yeah, let's do them next week.
All right. Well, thank you for listening today. And maybe next week we'll get back to playing some tunes to break it up a bit. So We might not. It is up to us, yeah.
All right, then. Thanks for listening.
Cheerio.
Bye.